In some ways, it's just like the nativity come to life, I feel like, right here on our very own carpet. I love it. Today is my favorite Sunday of Advent. I love the day that we get to light the joy candle because it matches all that I hope and long for Christmas to be. You know, like the joy and the sparkle and the delight and the cheer and the hope is so fun. And for me, one of the things that kind of holds and captures all the joy of this season is Christmas music. Don't you just love getting into your car and turning on any assortment of radio stations and being able to hear thousands of Christmas songs? I need to know, what is your favorite song? Those of you who are online, would you type those in? Those of you who are in person, would you yell them really loud so I can hear them? Your favorite Christmas song?
Joy to the World.
Joy to the World? Is what? Oh, Charlie Brown Christmas special. Da 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 da. Okay, yes. Others?
Silent Night.
Ooh, what child is this? I'm repeating this so everyone can hear because I have the microphone. Oh, Holy Night. Still. Oh, Mary, did you know? Go tell it on the mountain. Christmas in the Northwest? For real, Nancy? You're telling me the truth. I was going to make a joke about that. I'm not going to make a joke about that anymore. Don't you dare. Oh, I thought the controversy was the last few weeks when you talked about decorating for Christmas, but apparently that is a point of controversy. I should just sit down. It's a gift God wrapped in green. Yes, it is. Anyone else? Your favorite Christmas songs? No one said Rudolph. No one said Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I like those ones, you know, because you have to have those along with the other ones. But certainly, it is the Christmas carols that have a special place in my heart. But when I get in the car and I turn on the radio, a lot of times those first songs I hear aren't just the Christmas carols, the ones that speak of the mystery and wonder. Sometimes they just sing about the simple things. I don't know about you, but sometimes I wish that those radio Christmas songs would actually communicate the reality of the Christmas season for us. Just once, I'd be very comforted to hear Have Yourself a Stressful Little Christmas. Or, It's the Most Depressing Time of the Year. Or, a Christmas carol that we sing in church, but could be very true. Oh, Come All Ye Anxious. Of course, these songs wouldn't lift our spirits, but perhaps they would speak to the soul in an honest way. The biblical account of the things we celebrate at Christmas, the coming of Christ, is certainly full of wonder and joy and hope and delight and even a little sparkle. And Christ comes right in the middle of sadness and darkness and hopelessness and fear. The reality of our humanity is not overlooked by God. Even better than being overlooked, it is actually carefully addressed by God. And God doesn't just provide us with a solution. Jesus saves. Good, done. God provides a presence in the midst of it. A presence that no other deity has ever offered on the face of the earth. A presence that becomes acquainted with the human experience so that it might redeem that experience. Today we look at the prophecy of Isaiah, which is a fulfillment. Then in Matthew is a fulfillment of this prophecy. And today I want to focus on the role that fear, specifically fear, played in the unfolding narrative, and how with the incarnation of Jesus, our response to Jesus' coming isn't just faith, it's something even more. And so I'm so thankful for Nina and your whole family as they read the, Isaiah 7. Let me summarize just a little bit about Isaiah 7. All right? We had, you heard this word, heard a name, King Ahaz. You see, he's the king of Judah, and he is in trouble when we meet him in Isaiah 7. There's a threat of attack from the north, from this, from two kingdoms that are in alliance with one another. But they're in alliance not because they like one another, but because they really want to overthrow Ahaz. And so their plan was to invade Judah, which is the kingdom that King Ahaz is in charge of. They would overthrow Ahaz, and then they'd replace him with another king that would do what they wanted. And so in this book of Isaiah, chapter 7, Ahaz is, he embodies something. He embodies fickleness and faithlessness. His fear begins to motivate his decisions and his reactions, as all fear does for all of us. So Isaiah comes to him with a prophecy. And this prophecy is a sign for him, a sign that would let Ahaz know that Judah, his country, would not be conquered. What was the sign? Did you hear it? A virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. God's response to Ahaz's fear is Emmanuel. Okay, hold that thought. If you need to hold it out in your hand like this, you can do that. Now we turn to the Gospel of Matthew. Right here, we see the birth story of Jesus from Joseph's perspective. The Gospel of Luke tells us a story from Mary's perspective, and we're going to get to more of that on Christmas Eve. So come back, invite your friends, they can hear about Mary's perspective. But Matthew tells the story with Isaiah's prophecy right in front of his eyes as he's writing, and right in front of the Jewish people's eyes. They knew this prophecy. They knew what Isaiah had said to Ahaz, and so they're thinking about that. So I'd like to invite us to open up to Matthew, the very first book in the New Testament. It's right about here in your Bible. It's my favorite joke, because you can never find it, because so many pages in the Bible. But it is the very first book in the New Testament, right before this I have in my Bible. It says the New Testament. It's so nice of it to keep it so organized. We are going to look at Matthew, chapter 1, starting in verse 18. You can see it in your Bibles, or it's on the screen as well. This is how the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. Because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace, he had in mind to divorce her quietly. But after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. When Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took Mary home as his wife. But he did not consummate their marriage until she gave birth to a son. And he gave him the name Jesus. I used to scoff. I used to roll my eyes at the first instruction that the angel gave to Joseph. Do not be afraid. Like, yeah, right. Are you kidding? Here, Joseph is sleeping and an angel shows up in a dream. Okay, that's a fearful thing. And the whole situation around Joseph is incredibly tense. This time, when I came back to this passage again, knowing what it said, it made me ponder the situation around Joseph. You see, his life is surrounded, is engulfed by the unknown. The woman he loves, the woman he has pledged his life to, and she has pledged her life to him, she is now pregnant, and he's not responsible. And he's stuck now because of this pregnancy. He's stuck between what the law allows him to do and what his soul requires him to do. He could expose Mary, call her unfaithful, make a mockery of her, attach names and labels and sin to her, or he could handle the matter quietly and tenderly, but gut-wrenchingly. Neither option feels good to Joseph, and either option means he is without the one that he loves. When we are faced with impossible situations, situations that grab our gut, situations with no good outcome, it is the most human thing to fear. I am certain that Joseph was caught in a web of fear. Every and any option here requires something of him that he does not want to do. Not to mention the immense amount of a loss that he's anticipating in releasing his union with Mary. And I can guess that the fear that surrounded all of it was causing him to toss and turn that night when the angel appeared to him. And so the angel says, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid." Fear is a natural human response when anything around us becomes uncertain. Fear, this thing in our body, tells us that something is not right with the situation, or that something could cause harm in the situation, or that something could be lost in the situation. And our body responds in very specific ways. It actually reacts in very specific ways. You've maybe heard of two, right? When you fear, it's either you fight or you flight. Have you heard that? Yeah. Thank you for nodding, even if you haven't heard that. There's actually a third response. There's fight. Yes, there's flight. There's also freeze. When we encounter situations in which fear is triggered in us, we have three reactions: fight, flight, freeze. And the way that that looks is totally dependent on the situation. If a bear is coming towards you, don't they say to punch it in the nose? Yeah? Anybody? Oh, okay. Anyone have experience punching a bear in the nose? I've heard that if a bear is coming, you try and get really big and you punch it in the nose. Okay, that's the fight response. All right? Another option if a bear is coming to you is to flight, to run away, because that thing could get you, okay? I've never tested these theories. These are just natural responses that happen in our body, and we just react, okay? The third is to freeze. You become solid still. I've also heard that that's effective in fighting bears. None of this, hopefully you'll ever have to use any of this information, but this is the natural human reaction. Now, if fear comes to us in a way that is not in the form of a bear, our body does the same thing, but it looks different. In that fight response, sometimes we attack people, whether with our words or our actions. Sometimes we defend ourselves. We go and respond to them in a way that looks like defense. And sometimes we problem solve. We think of all the solutions to this thing that we are encountering that feels like fear in us. Or we flight. We run away from the situation. We avoid the situation. We flee from the people or the situation that is causing us fear. Or we freeze. That would sometimes look like numbing, being unable to make any decisions, being stuck. These reactions to fear are involuntary responses, and they're there to keep us alive and functioning in the world. If there was a bear, your fear would tell you something and you would respond. And when you sense then fear in your body, given a variety of any sort of situation, these involuntary responses are there to keep you alive. They themselves are not the attack, but a result of something that feels threatening. Joseph finds himself fearful, and rightly so. And he's probably oscillating between fighting or flighting or freezing. Because he's also, you can tell, he's problem solving. He's also trying to figure out a way to get himself out of the situation. And he also finds himself so stuck. So when I read that the angel told Joseph to simply be not afraid, I become confused because it seems such a simple request given the varied and complicated dynamic that Joseph finds himself in. It is certainly where King Ahaz finds himself too when the prophet Isaiah speaks to him. He is surrounded in fear, and his reactions to that fear seem to fall under that fight category. And while Isaiah could have said a lot of things to Ahaz about his fear, Isaiah gives him a sign. And not just any sign, he gives him Emmanuel. The angel could have said a lot of things to Joseph about Joseph's fear, but instead the angel gives a prophecy, a fulfillment of the prophecy, a sign. The angel says, "Here comes Emmanuel." The angel gives Joseph Emmanuel. The answer to Joseph's fear, which was initiated by Mary's unplanned pregnancy, is not the removal of the thing that caused the fear. It is actually an invitation to embrace the thing that is causing the fear. An invitation to embrace the thing that is causing the fear. In this instance, Joseph is invited to receive the fullness of that which is causing his fear. What? In the unfolding story of the incarnation, Joseph's participation with Mary and with Jesus is an act of true faith. It's pretty common around Christian circles and even in non-Christian circles to hear that the opposite of fear is faith. I even have a little plaque that sits on my bookshelf. It says, "Let faith be bigger than your fear." It's cute. It sounds kitschy. It looks good on a plaque. And within this line of logic, if one is fearful, it must mean that they are not faithful. That is, if there is fear, which is an instinctual human reaction for the purpose of saving that person's life, it must mean that there's a lesser amount of faith. I've truly struggled with this line of logic for a long time. In fact, my time in counseling over the past 2 years has helped reshape a lot of this for me. You see, I like to say I play on the anxiety playground. Anyone else? Don't raise your hands. I play on the anxiety playground. There have been times in my life where I have dominated that playground, or maybe that playground has dominated me. In general, I find myself on this playground of anxiety after experiencing loss or anticipating loss in any of its forms. And so it's actually grief or anticipating grief that sends me back to the swinging and sliding world of anxious chaos. And I get caught in the loops of fighting, flighting, freezing, fighting, 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 flighting, freezing, fighting, flighting, freezing. And no amount of just believe in Jesus could ever get me out of those loops. And to add to the fear, it's the lines of logic that I believed before that meant that if I was fearful, that meant I wasn't faithful, that kept me hidden. That line of logic meant that I could never be honest about my fear. Instead, I just took on shame for my lack of faith. And then I was distraught, because it seemed like my relationship with Jesus was faltering because of the fear I was experiencing. This line of logic meant that instead of pursuing healing, instead of being open and honest with people who did love Jesus, who could speak words of kindness and healing and hope to me, I chose to hide in shame. And then in what I felt like was faithlessness. You see, I've come to learn that the opposite of fear is not faith, it's love. The opposite of fear is love. Often, fear appears when there is either the perception or the reality that what we love could be lost. Love and fear are connected, and the way to move through the fear is not just to have faith, but to acknowledge and to receive God who is love. And to acknowledge and to receive that there might be something I love that's being threatened. 1 John chapter 4 gives us an outline for this. Chapter 4, 1 John 4:16 says, God is love, and all who live in love live in God, and God lives in them. And then 4:18, there is no fear in love. When the angel meets Joseph and proclaims, do not be afraid, I think the angel is actually inviting Joseph to love. Love. To receive divine love in human form, which is Emmanuel, God with us. And if God is love, then love with us as well. Emmanuel, God, love with us. My work with my counselor has taught me and reminded me again and again and again and again that the antidote to fear is not to try harder to have faith or then to beat myself up because I am afraid or to numb myself to the fear, but to consider that actually this fear is telling me about something that I love. If I can consider the thing that I love, if I can get down to the basis of it, then I can do the mind and soul and spirit work for myself. And I can discover that love. And I can actually also be loved. I think that this, perhaps, is a part of faith. That perhaps faith is the process of allowing love to reach our fear. Faith, perhaps, is the process of allowing love to reach our fear. It's not as though Joseph had faith in Jesus just yet. Remember, Jesus was just coming onto the scene. Joseph had never really met him. But Joseph does act faithfully. In response to the angel's words, he allows love incarnate. If you would capitalize both of those words for me, would you? He allows love incarnate to take up space in his life. And not just a toenail of space. He allows love incarnate to fill up his life, take up a lot of space there. And my guess is that this was not a one-time decision for Joseph. The angel says, don't be afraid. The angel says, you're going to have this Jesus in your life. I actually think that Joseph had to make a decision over and over and over again to receive this love incarnate and to allow it to speak to his fear, to say the truth about his fear and allow love incarnate to be in his life. It was a series of decisions and an ever unfolding choice to let love speak to his fears. I think this is faithful. Now the angel is asking something more of him. He's asking for Joseph to give this baby a name. And names in the Bible are really important. Really important. And if Joseph wasn't the one that was to name the baby, someone else would have done it. But I think the angel asked Joseph specifically to name Jesus. Because in an act of love and faithfulness, moving through his fear, Joseph is ready to first receive Mary again and then to receive that which is given through her for him and for the world. It's as though it was a sort of declaration for Joseph to be able to name Jesus. Because having experienced his own realm of fear and confliction and anxiety, this good news of great joy that arrives for Joseph first is that God saves. God saves. And then that second name, Emmanuel, God with us, is the second part for Joseph. That not only is his fear valid, not only does the love speak to the fear, but the love is actually going to come close enough to his fear that he won't know what it is anymore. You see, Jesus, God saves, it specifies what Jesus does. God saves. And Emmanuel specifies who Jesus is. Jesus is God with us. And when we embrace the totality of Jesus, fully God and fully human, we see that here in these names. God saves is his human name, Jesus. Did you know that Jesus was a really common name back then? There were like a lot of Jesuses running around. And then he gets his extra special one, Emmanuel, God with us. This is his divine name. And Joseph gets to be the first one to bear witness to this. So Joseph gets to name the source of his fear, and he names him Jesus. And little does he know that naming his fear means he's also naming his faith and his love. Because soon Joseph is going to discover it. All his faith is wrapped up in this Jesus. And all the love that could ever be love is wrapped up in this Emmanuel. Joseph here is doing the work of faith. It's my prayer that this Advent season, we could be honest, maybe for the first time, about our fears, about the things that are very real for us, but we don't often talk about. The things that Jesus entered precisely into as Emmanuel. And instead of coating these things over in tinsel and glitter and what I would like to call faith, not because faith without quotations isn't something, but sometimes we just cover it in faith so that it'll all be okay. What if instead we were honest about these things first? A true act of faithfulness. What if words that, I do wonder what words you might speak then to your fear. I wonder what words God would speak to your fear. Attending to these questions is an act of faith and love. I hear the words of the angel differently now. Do not be afraid is not a command. It's an invitation. This invitation sounds more to me like this. What are you afraid of losing that you love? Guess what? Love is coming. Love is coming in Emmanuel Jesus. The God who saves is with us. There is no fear in love, and love, capital L, is here. Sometimes we give specific time for prayer and reflection after the sermon. I hope that maybe you've been reflecting this whole time. It's my hope that maybe your brain, your body, your mind would be engaged the whole time. But I do wonder if you've had some reflections, but it's sometimes hard. You notice them, but you can't bring them all together. I want us to take some time to sort of bring them all together. I wonder if it's helpful for you to capture that reflection in maybe a word or a picture or even a feeling in your body. Maybe you can even identify where fear lives in your body. Think even this start, this beginning of the conversation, even just being honest, is an act of true faith. It is an immediate and beautiful response to love incarnate with us. So I'm going to hold some space with us. If you can identify some of those things, it is risky to identify some of those things. And so even if you just need to ask God to be close, to have the courage to identify those things, that would be beautiful. Let us go to God with us in prayer. God, we thank you for these bodies. These bodies that tell us that when we're in danger, we need to do something about it. And God, I thank you that you have offered Jesus, love incarnate, to speak to those things in our body. That you've actually given us love incarnate to keep us alive. And so here now, though it may not feel like it, it is a joy to be able to trust you with our fears. Here now, it is a joy to be honest with you about these things. And here now, it is a gift to wonder how love incarnate, love with us, might speak to the fear. And so we are listening. Thank you, Emmanuel Jesus, that because of your love, we have the opportunity to not be afraid.